Hi, it's Jacinta from ABC Radio Melbourne, the afternoon show. And today we got into a conversation around divorce and if it's possible to have a friendly divorce. We were joined by a family lawyer who helped us understand some of the complexities that they face.
On ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria, you're with Jacinta Parsons.
How do you divorce in a way that's constructive, positive, in inverted commas, nice? Joining us to help us navigate, I keep saying that word today, but work through some of the, there must be fundamentals around this, is Sally Nichols, the founder and managing partner at Nichols Family Lawyers. Hello, Sally.
Hi, lovely to be here.
Great. You are part of the Victorian Law Week, which started on Monday. It's running right through till Sunday. You've actually got a session on divorce. Is a friendly divorce or separation possible?
That's right, tomorrow.
Tomorrow. So you can get on web and check it out via online, which is always wonderful.
Absolutely. There's a heap of free webinars for the public, which will be really terrific. And I really encourage listeners to take advantage of it.
I love that this is a way that we can straight up talk about divorce. We've always had sort of cultural concepts around divorce as it being acrimonious. I mean, of course, it's the most stressful time for families potentially to go through. But it doesn't have to necessarily be with the aggression or the, you know, discontent, I'm thinking of strange words to describe it, that it is shown to be.
Now, you're describing it really well. And I think with any family, and I think we can all relate to this, there's conflict. Because when partners come together, you're bringing your own value systems, your own stories from your own families. And when a relationship breaks down, you can actually resource yourself up, and it's how you can turn those conflicts into a positive. And when I'm saying that, we can actually, when somebody comes and fronts to us, they're obviously distressed, they're going through a terrible time, but if we can identify the resources to help them look at that conflict and how we can resolve it and maybe empower people, some of the greatest causes of conflict might be a feeling of being disempowered, blindsided, there might be mental health issues. So that's why if you can work with a family lawyer, and most of them are terrific and engaged and getting the right resources to their clients, so really looking at the whole person and trying to actually turn and identify what's causing that conflict. And sometimes too, particularly when children are involved, a lot of clients can really get out of self if we start focusing on what's best for the kids, putting aside the acrimony, explaining how any acrimony will be really detrimental to kids in the long term. So if we can put that aside, work on it, but try and actually have a united front for children, even if you're in two separate houses, it can be such a win for the kids.
Such an interesting intersection for law, isn't it, to be talking about the whole person in a way.
Absolutely, because we're not taught that at law school.
No. I was talking about it not that long ago. It's almost like the health profession as well. Are you a good doctor, but also understanding that there's a whole person standing in front of you? Is law and the family law world, is it the best place to be dealing with separation?
Oh, I think we can triage, and we should see ourselves as triage.
I like that.
Yeah, I think so. And the court's trying to do this too. They've got an amazing program that hasn't hit Melbourne yet in Brisbane called the Lighthouse Project, where they actually try to identify and triage applications where they can see there's an urgent need or risk or domestic violence. But for us as practitioners, if we educate ourselves, and I've been working, for example, during Law Week with a lot of domestic violence NGOs and support services, really trying to unpack what the indicators are, how we can actually help somebody who has been the victim of family violence, and also understanding that they might not be ready for the legal solution. They might really need therapeutic intervention at first, just for their confidence to come up and to really hear them and make that assessment. So we really do need to work in very well in a multidisciplinary way with therapists. I'm very passionate about that.
That's huge, isn't it? Because you're seeing potential clients, humans, come through your door, and you have to be able to understand and see red flags or see and understand the tone of that relationship and if anyone's in danger.
Completely.
And then, wow. And again, you don't learn that in law school.
No, we don't. And it's similar to, I guess, to GPs. I mean, hopefully the curriculum is changing. And the seminar I actually moderated yesterday, I learn every time I work with these amazing stakeholders who protect those most vulnerable. Say Domestic Violence Victoria, Safe and Equal, the Victorian Police are very good on education too, trying to make sure that we actually see those risk indicators and keep people safe first. So I can easily talk to them about what the legal outcome might be, but we need to make sure that children are safe, that victim survivors are safe, and we maybe look at the subtleties of language too in terms of how we can empower people, but make sure we're not overbearing in trying to immediately find a legal solution because they might need a therapeutic one.
You've really brought up something I had never thought about, really, in terms of how complex the role in family law is, and lots of text messages are probably coming through asking, you know, these questions are emotional as well.
Of course.
And loaded, not loaded, but, you know, there's a lot of experiences that people have obviously had. Helena says, an interesting question. I'd love to hear from Sally what a family lawyer's ethical obligations are when they are representing a perpetrator of family violence. Too often the court process is subject to systems abuse by perpetrators who draw our proceedings to exhaust victim survivors' emotional and financial resources. I should say it's not Helena, it's Louisa. But, I mean,
that resonates with me so much. And that was actually, was it Helena who's, or
it,
Louisa?
It was actually Louisa.
I'm sorry, Louisa, but that resonates so much with us. And we were actually discussing legal systems abuse in the webinar for Law Week yesterday and what we can do as officers of the court. So as officers of the court, we can't pursue an application in court that's doomed to fail. So more often than not, and Louisa would relate to this, someone who's perpetrated violence on a woman will actually seek...
Or other way around, of course.
Yes.
But it's,
yes.
It's not as common.
No, it's not. And that's another interesting learning that I had yesterday. There are services that do really err on the side, particularly now of believing people, and that's something that's really important in the legal process. How do we actually deal with the fact that family violence might not be determined for 2 years or 6 years? So the types of correspondence that's going back and forth between solicitors, we have to be very careful that we're not perpetrating that abuse. We need to maybe look at definitions of family violence and perhaps include systems abuse. Louisa, I think that's an important aspect, because if somebody is actually, if a perpetrator is seeking to take children away as a punitive measure, and they would never succeed, as a lawyer, I can't proceed with that application ethically. I should not be doing that if it's doomed to fail. That's one of our ethical obligations. So that's something that we talked about quite passionately yesterday.
And the situation that you are in, not as trained professionals, health professionals, mental health professionals are making those assessments. And you were saying the intersection with your profession, family law, and the services that sit around families is a really important interaction. Is that supported systemically? Do we see that that's sort of encouraged in that whole person kind of care?
In the Lighthouse Project, it is in the family court, but we haven't, as I said, it's an excellent program which triages and provides family consultants for those at risk. That's in the court, and hopefully that will extend to the whole of Australia shortly. In the WIMS Legal Service in Victoria, they are a little bit jealous. They have social workers on tap to work with their clients. So they can actually call on somebody if, as a lawyer, we're feeling, look, we're not social scientists, we can empathise, but this person needs triage and some social work assistance right now. So we have to, as family lawyers, I believe, really extend our grounds. And we have some wonderful collaborative organisations like the AFCC, where we work with and meet regularly with psychologists, and we have joint conferences together to try and see how we can triage and learn from each other. So psychologists have often said to me too, when dealing with family violence, it's actually helpful to be able to quote the law. For example, culturally, in some families, it might be acceptable to actually, or some people think that culturally they're allowed to actually be violent. And it's very helpful for some psychologists to say they can't work through another way to be able to say, well, no, in this country, it's actually illegal. So that helps them. So we can actually work together.
And back and forth.
That's right.
Sally Nicholls, you've blown my mind. It's sort of an area that I haven't had deep thinking around in terms of that. It's just such an interesting thing to think about your experience in your work. Ali Webb joins us. She's actually done a podcast with Tamara O'Dine, who is our 7 o'clock news reporter, around the good divorce. Ali, welcome. Sally's here as well. Ali, although it's not working, I'll find out in just a moment. Is she there?
I'm here.
Oh, sorry, Ellie. Just quickly, Ellie, tell us the podcast that you put together was in 2020. What for you were some of the important aspects of ensuring a good divorce?
Well, I think the thing about being divorced, when I got divorced, I was 34 years of age, and it was a time that all my friends were getting married, not getting divorced. So I had no idea how to get divorced. So I Googled, how do you get divorced? And everything was so negative and bitter. And I just didn't want to be that bitter older woman going, I'm divorced and I'm broken. I wanted to find a way to get through, to get the experience done and dusted and become a new person at the end. So the whole podcast was about, you know, that divorce doesn't have to be as painful and, you know, breakable as you read about on Google or all these news articles. It can actually be a restart or a time to start your life again. And we don't get that many chances in life to start again. And that was it for me.
We can still get that podcast.
You sure can. It should be on Radio National somewhere.
The Good Divorce. Ali Webb, we need to talk about that in more detail. But thank you so much. Great to speak to you today.
You too.
Sally, you are nodding vigorously.
Absolutely.
With Ali. It is, I'm just blown away at the requirement for a family lawyer to have this sense of the human that is experiencing something at all different stages of their lives.
Look, absolutely. And I've done a bit of study at mediation as well. So there's a lot of alternatives for people like Ali to take advantage of, where you can turn conflict around. I remember when I said that, you raised your eyebrows, into a positive, because if conflict's natural, so how can we actually turn it and work through that conflict? And identify.
That's comforting to hear that. Conflict is natural.
Yep.
Let's not, go down deeper into that. Let's find a way.
And our job as lawyers is actually not to inflame it, but to diffuse it. And I do believe most family lawyers do have that value in those ethics, and it's really important to stick to them.
That's the difficult thing. Divorce and going through that experience is something that will happen to people often. You know, you're not sort of saying, well, in 5 years we'll get divorced, so let's go and find our best divorce support. How do you navigate the world of divorce lawyers and ensure that you are dealing with somebody that reflects the ethics that you've just described? Because I'm sure that's not on, I mean, do you get voted? Do you get rated? How do you know?
I think it's actually go by referrals and word of mouth. That's really important. And also too, I think when you have initial consult, ask those important questions about the values and how can I avoid court? And most family lawyers will say, that's such a good aim to have, let's try and do it. Or if you say, actually, I get on really well with my partner, I just want to sort things out fairly, we'll just grab onto that and say music to our ears, because no one wants to work with a high conflict family. They can avoid it. We want to try and be solution driven. But if you have an interview with a lawyer who says, oh, let's get them and let's do this, and there was this terrible advertising campaign in England that was really controversial, where there were placards saying, let's get the bitch or something like that. It was about 15 years ago. But again, that is just so opposite what we want to achieve. We want to work with people. We want to be solution driven and just get that animosity out of there.
How expensive is it to go in that route? Because I think that access for all sectors of our community to ensure that they've got good support and ethical legal, you know, frameworks. Is it hard to also, is it expensive?
To consult a lawyer, there's a range. I think it is expensive. I think if you can actually go through FDR, which is Family Dispute Resolution Mediation, it's just excellent. If you do mediation and if you're, it's often means tested, which is wonderful, and you've got very experienced practitioners who will actually be competitive, and I think half the price at least of lawyers to get a good result for you and a mediated result. What I do think, though, it's really important for empowerment. I do like people to actually go to a lawyer just to get a range of outcomes of what the outcome should be before they go to mediation, so they actually have had some legal advice before they go in. But mediation and other alternative forms of dispute resolution can be more interest-based rather than rights-based, and that's also a fantastic thing to do. It's not about what my rights are, but what's actually good for your family. What do we all agree on is the common goals here? We want to make sure the children actually feel that they're not to blame for the divorce. That might be one of the goals in mediation. So it can be an amazing, really friendly and good environment.
And Sally, I guess it's been so good to talk to you about this. I feel like we need to do this again. Like, you
love
don't,
to.
Because I think we could really isolate aspects of this experience, and it's something we've got great texts coming through. I've had great, reactions to positive divorce, but I'm sure it's really about that education around options and doing things fairly and knowing how to go about doing
that. Completely. Knowing what your priorities are, and often children and their best interests really is a common ground that can unite parents too. So that's something to think about.
Is a friendly divorce or separation possible as part of the Victorian Law Week? You can jump onto that webpage and sign up. It's during the day tomorrow on the web. Thank you so much for joining us.
Absolute pleasure.
Sally Nichols there from Nichols Family Lawyers.